So I want to talk about the Arba Koses, the four cups of wine, and the message that they teach us, and what is the kavana that a person should have, what's the intention that we need to have when we drink the four cups of wine. And the four cups of wine are really one of the basic symbols of the Seder. And of course, the Seder itself is a journey from slavery to freedom, and everything in the Torah is nitzchi, everything in the Torah is forever. So every mitzvah that exists of the 613 mitzvahs, they do exist all the time, and even if the temple is no longer here, that doesn't mean that anything that's written in the Torah or any of the practices or the rituals has ceased, because each of them is a metaphor, and the metaphors apply to each of us and we can use them. So I want to talk about the four cups of wine. Also, maybe this week I'll talk about first the idea of breaking the middle matzah. On page 18 in the Haggadah of Kavanot, I talk about what is the thought, what is it we're saying when we break the middle matzah. Normally on Shabbos we have two challahs, lechem mishneh, in memory of the time we were in the wilderness, and on Friday there used to fall two measures of manna from heaven, because on Shabbos there was none. And in memory of that, we still today, when comes Shabbos, we have two loaves of bread where normally we would have one. On the Seder night, we take a third matzah. And then before we begin the Seder, we break the matzah. The larger part we put away, we call that the afikomen. And it's traditional that people hide it, and it's a tradition that the children go looking for it, and those, you know, the one who finds the afikomen, it's a prize. And then at the end of the meal, the very last act of eating is the eating of the afikomen, and that's eaten in the place where in ancient times we ate the lamb, the paschal lamb. And then the Seder, the eating part of the Seder is over, and we go on with the grace after meals and so on. So what is this idea of breaking the matzah? The thing is, the meaning of slavery, the metaphorical meaning of slavery, is the split of the self. And this is something that happens to us at a very early age, that we split, and that something, some trauma occurs. You know, sometimes it can be the trauma of birth itself. The Gemara says, and the Gemara Nida says, that Behiloi Neiroi Alei Roishi, that while a child is in the womb, an angel comes and teaches it the whole Torah. And then, as the child passes through the birth canal, the angel strikes it, and the child forgets the Torah. So the process of learning that we do in our life is really a process of remembering. So perhaps that's the trauma. But, you know, speaking for myself, I know that it's a later trauma. The splitting of the self happens with a perceived rejection. You know, if you're lying there in the crib and you're looking up into your parents' face, you learn really how to read the face. That's your whole, it's your whole world. If Cholila v'chas, God forbid, a baby looks up into his parents' face and there's rejection there, you know, the baby reads a message that you're not enough. And the baby feels, oh yeah, I'm not enough for some reason. And sometimes it can be because of something's going on inside the parent. Doesn't matter why. The point is that something in the child dies. I'm not enough. You know, it's much too scary for a child to process and come to the conclusion that there's something wrong with my parent. You know, that person who's looking at me is wrong. Can't think that way when you're a baby, because that's too scary. So instead, something happens to us if we don't get that unconditional acceptance and validation that we need, then something very deep and profoundly breaking happens inside the self. And that is the beginning of exile, because if I can't be who I am, then there's a part of me that is going into hiding, and I am from then on only going to try and be what I perceive those parents want to see, and I will act and I will pretend. Shlomi used to say that when God makes us B'Tselem Elokim, every child is made B'Tselem Elokim in the likeness of God. And then we're born Nebuch, and our parents think that their duty is to make us into their image. And we go through a whole lifetime then thereafter looking and trying to regain and recapture and become the image of God that we were born. But really, you know, it's not, our parents misunderstood their duty, and they didn't realize that we were already in the image of God, and that there was nothing wrong with us the way we were born. But because they themselves received that message that they weren't enough, and so they come, they try and make us in their image, or what they think is a human being is supposed to be, and that's the beginning of all the tragedy. So the beginning of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is eventually going to be the Exodus, it's presaged by this breaking, by this shattering, the splitting. And the thing about the Lechem Oini, the poor man's bread, is that when you give a poor man a loaf of bread, he takes the bigger part of it and puts it away for later, for some time he's going to need it, because the thought of receiving a loaf of bread and using it and eating it all up is inconceivable. That's profligate. That's wasting. That's not good husbandry. So the poor man always takes the bigger chelik, the bigger portion, and secretes it somewhere to be used later. And this is the idea. Before we begin the Seder, we go through the process of Yachatz, which is this breaking, this sundering and splitting, and we take the matzah, we break it, and then the bigger part of it is put away. Later, what happens is we go through the process of the Seder, we come to the meal, we make a brocha l'achilas matzah, and that brocha on the matzah is actually, we're going to be making that on the small piece, and we eat the small piece. This is our matzah. And then we go through the process where we actually come to the moment of the revelation of the divine, the Gilui Shechina, which is the moment of the eating of the Pesach. In this place, what do we do? What is our symbolic act of eating the Pesach? We take that matzah which was hidden and we eat it. So what we're really doing is we're finding that part of ourselves. We have to go through the process of the Seder, in the main through the process of Maggid, as we'll be saying. We go, we find that part of ourselves which was hidden, and we bring it to the open. And ultimately, in order to become whole, we have to reintegrate it. We have to absorb it. We have to own it. And that is the process of eating the Afikoimen. And when we've done that, then we have Gilu Shechina. Then we have the revelation of the divine, of the Shechina, which, as we're going to see, that is expressed in Hallel, in song. So, the whole story of the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus from Egypt, is really, it's a metaphor. It's a historical event, but it's a metaphor. Each of us goes into exile, and each of us has to work through our exile and get out of it. And the trouble is that most of us don't want to get out of it. Most of us are so focused on protecting those bits of ourselves that we have. There's a story, I think the Belzer Rebbe used to tell this story about a poor man who was caught up in events. Who knows, an army moves here, army moves there. And, you know, he was homeless. And that time there was a lot of Yidden who were homeless. There was one almona, famous almona, a wealthy woman, who used to help poor people, and poor people would come through her town. You knew that you could go there, and if you needed clothing, she'd give you clothing, or food, or a little money. And she noticed this man. He was very quiet and kept himself to himself, and he seemed like a very ordentlicher Mensch. And after a few years of noticing him, she took him aside once when he passed through the town. She said, "You know, I've asked about you, and I know your story and how unfortunate you lost everything in such and such a battle. And you know, my husband was killed around the same time, and here I am. I've inherited his shop, and Baruch Hashem, things are good. And you know, but I'm a widow, and you're a widower. I want to suggest perhaps you could let's get married, and you don't be homeless anymore. Let's try and build a life together." And he thinks about it, and he says, "Seems like a very good idea, but you know, I've been living all these years, I've been living on the streets, and really, you don't know, you until you've lived a life of beggar, you don't know what it does to you, and you don't know what it is, and I fear that it has shaped my personality after living like this for a number of years, and really, unless you could enter into the spirit of that poverty, we're not really going to be able to understand one another and build a marriage. So I will agree to marry you on one condition. For 1 year after we marry, you put this shop into the hands of an agent, and with me you come and live the life of a homeless person for 1 year. And then you'll know. You'll have experienced it, and we'll be able to have a marriage." So she thinks, not a bad idea. They get married, and they walk away from all their belongings, and for 1 year, you know, they go from town to town as a beggar couple, and they only have, you know, certain places, you know, and certain farmers, they let you sleep in their barns and so on, and through the summer, it's nicht so gefährlich, they live off the land and the mushrooms and the forest and the fish, and then comes winter and it's really hard. But you know something, the worst is the springtime. It's gefährlich, because the roads are bogged, it's just mud, and there's nothing to eat left over from last year, and people starve, and it's, you can't get dry, you can't get warm, and it's the end of the springtime, and they're in this town somewhere, and they're starving hungry. And the man says to his wife, "Ruchele, do you know what day it is today?" And she says, "Oi, day, it's a hungry day, it's a cold day, it's a wet, miserable day." He says, no, Ruchele, just think, what day is it today?" She says, "I can't think. Let's just go knock on, you try that house over there." "We didn't try the house over there." He says, "Ruchele, stop, it's our wedding anniversary, we can stop all this." And she says, "Look, I can't talk to you, let's just do till the end of this street, let's just knock till the end of this street. You know, there's something that happens to us in exile, that we stop thinking of ourselves as chelik lekamima. We stop thinking of ourselves as these divine creatures. There's a shechina. We stop thinking of ourselves as the expression of God's malchus, God's sovereignty in the world. We can't think like this anymore. And instead, we think of the smallness of ourselves, and even just the idea of going out there and becoming who we are is very, very difficult for us to do. So let's come back to the first kois, and let's talk about the arba koises. And this is something, you know, there's something that happens to us in the splitting of the self, and the going into exile, is we have flawed thinking. Like this woman who had started to think of herself as poor, as a beggar, as a homeless street person, there's something that happens to us as we grow up owning this split, that we actually think to ourselves that we're not, we don't own anything. So what is the basic flaw? Well, if you look up into your parents' eyes and you're not enough, no, I'm not enough. I think to myself, there's something wrong with me. And even though we grow up and we're socialized and we're educated, but the feeling of something's not right in me, that persists. And it doesn't just affect one area of my life. It affects everything. It affects my basic worldview. And ultimately, it affects my understanding of who God is, because God made me. So God made me broken. God made me somehow flawed and unfixable, and ultimately, of course, unlovable. And so this is my basic, my first myth, is this perception or idea of myself as not good enough. And it follows from that I have to hide that, because if people see who I am, then they will reject me. So, you know, one of my prime goals or directives is to prevent anybody from knowing how flawed I am and how broken and how wrong. And so this is what prevents me from being intimate. As we see with Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve, when they ate from the tree of knowledge, they were ashamed. And God says, why are you ashamed? You know, they said, well, we're naked. He said, well, who told you that you're naked? Have you eaten from the tree of knowledge of good and evil from which I told you not to eat? Because there's something that happened there. They felt that they had to hide from God. So just imagine what we, who are not born in the Garden of Eden, feel we have to hide from. The idea that the shame, which was supposed to be there to tell us, to give us careful boundaries, and to tell us, you know, oi, that was not an act that you should have done, that was a godlike act, killing. Who has a right to kill? Well, whoever can make life has a right to kill. So if I kill, I feel shame, because killing is really something that I should leave to God. Shame is there supposed to tell me when I'm breaking a boundary. But for Adam and Chava, because something had happened inside them, this primary split, the shame becomes toxic, and they become ashamed of themselves rather than ashamed of the act, that feeling I'm not enough. And so Adam and Chava, they separate. Gemara says they separated for 130 years. They couldn't be intimate with one another, because intimacy means allowing the other person to see who I am. And it became absolutely imperative that that not happen. So this is part of the exile of the self from the self, and this is our, each of us, our own Egyptian exile. Is that feeling of this, you know, God says to Abraham, Yodoya Teda ki ge yer zarach, you should know that you know. Yodoya Teda, you should know that you know that your grandchildren, your descendants are going to be strangers in a land that's not theirs, and they will be oppressed there for many years. So the idea of Yodoya Teda is that you should know that you know. Why use that expression, Yodoya Teda? Which normally is translated as you shall surely know. Because the going down into Egypt, that exile is called the exile of Das, the exile of knowing, because knowing is intimacy. And it's the exile of intimacy. And not only did we not know, but we didn't know that we didn't know. You see, if I forget something, If I lose my keys, and I know I've lost my keys, and I'm frantically looking for my keys, it's very unfortunate, it's not a tragedy. But if I lose my keys, and then I forget that I've lost my keys, that's already a tragedy, because then I'm not looking. The Sanzer Rebbe was once walking along the street, and he sees a girl crying. He says, "Was weinst du? Why are you crying?" She says, "I was playing hide and seek with my friends, and they didn't look for me. They went home. They're not looking for me." And the Sanzer Rebbe started to cry. He said, "Oi, Gewalt. God is playing this game with us. He hides. We're supposed to come and find him, but we went home. Because we're at the stage of the Golos of Das where we don't know that we don't know anymore. And so it happens with ourselves that we don't realize that part of ourselves is hidden, and it's the greater part of ourselves. Instead, we feel faulty. We feel so flawed and damaged and wounded, and we think that's all there is. And because there's so much wound there, we feel we have to hide it, because if anybody sees how wounded we are, then they're going to reject us. And so that becomes, we've put all our energy into hiding. And so, of course, the next myth is that since I'm so flawed and I have to protect that from being seen, from being revealed, nobody's going to be meeting my needs. Whatever I need in this world, I'm going to have to grab it for myself, because who could take care of me? I'm so wounded, and anyway, I'm hiding the wound, so of course I can't be taken care of, because nobody knows what I need. So if there's something that I need, I better get it and grab it for myself. And then, of course, all these myths lead to the greatest myth of all, which is, oy, what do I need? I need money, I need status, I need to get high, I need this, I need love, I need to get high, I need to get away, I need to be on my own. I have a whole list, a laundry list of needs that I have to go and get for myself. This is exile, this is the Golos of Mitzrayim. This is what it was like to be in Egypt, and this is what it's like for us inside the self. So what is the Sedanite? We reverse these myths. So what is the very first of the Arba Kosos? Which is the first of the four cups of wine? It's Kiddush. In Kiddush we say, Blessed are you God, Asher Bochar Bonu. Thank you for choosing something inside us. You know, we have to come back really to the basics, which is, I'm a creature of God, and God doesn't make rubbish. Really, it's absolutely fundamental to my belief, to my religion, my faith as a Jew, is that God doesn't make rubbish, and that I'm not rubbish, and that I'm, you know, however much I may feel that I'm damaged and wounded and flawed and so, but that's not the case, that I am who God made me. All the time, I am God, who God made me, and forever, from forever until forever, I will be. And that is the Kiddush Asher Bochar Bonu. God, you chose us, not because of something we are, not because of something we're not. It's just, since the beginning of time, you had me in mind. Hast mich allemal in Sinn gehabt. God, you always had me in mind. Everything that's happened since the Big Bang is there so that you because you had in mind to bring me into being. You created me. So if I really internalize that, then I can't at the same time hold on to the myth of how bad I am. So before drinking the first cup of wine, a person should have the kavana that the chief meaning of the first of the four cups of wine is that God chose me, myself. Verotzo bi, who desired me, and created me with as the work of his hands. In every moment, in every second, in every minute, I am in that very form that God created me at his will. That's the meaning when I'm drinking the first kais, please help me, Master of the Universe, to internalize this, that you made me, you wanted me, and you created me. The second cup of wine we drink after Maggid. What is Maggid? We tell the Haggadah. Why is the Haggadah called the Haggadah? In Hebrew, there are three forms of expression. The most gentle one, the one that we call the feminine one, is Amira, saying. The next one, which is a little more powerful and strict and direct, maybe blunt, is dibur, speaking. The one that we call hard is Haggadah. If you got to say something tough to someone, the Gemara says, why is it called Haggadah? It's very makoshin kigidin. There's things that are hard as sinews. Or another meaning is that they taste bitter vidigal. You know, really, really something that's really hard to swallow. If somebody says, I'm going to give you a Haggadah, that's really hard things, hard words. Why is the Haggadah called the Haggadah? What's so hard about the Haggadah? So the Gemara says, Maschel Bignai, because the Haggadah begins with an ignoble story. And how does the Haggadah, what's the actual beginning of the Haggadah? In the beginning we were pagans. Our parents, our grandpa, our ancestors were pagans. We didn't worship God. We worshipped idols and we worshipped stars in the sky and we were completely way off. That's the story. And we ended up down in Egypt, but you know, now God has brought us to his worship and we're Jews. And that's the story. And that's why is it so hard? Because it's not nowhere, if you read through Genesis and Exodus, you don't find this, that we wanted to escape from Egypt because we wanted to better ourselves or because, you know, we wanted to go on some spiritual journey. That's not what it was, you know. When we had a moment and they weren't hitting us and beating us to build these cities of theirs, we stopped and we cried, Elalikei Avisenu, to the gods of our fathers. We didn't really have a relationship with God and we didn't really want to get out of Egypt. In fact, according to the Medrash, only a fifth of us actually came out. Most of us didn't really want to. We didn't want to become Jews. We wanted to be and the upper class of society, we wanted to be the ones holding the whips rather than the ones being whipped. But it wasn't, there's no noble story here in the story of Exodus. God drags us by the scruff of the neck. These are things that we have to internalize, you know. That really, Yetzias Mitzrayim is not, oi, I realized in what a state I was and I worked so hard and I worked on myself and I developed myself and I went through therapy and this and that and, you know, now look what a marvelous, but it's not what happened. God sent Moshe down to Egypt, Moshe who had not been part of that story, and he came and he told us, the time has come, God has remembered you, and you know, we said, leave us alone. Can you make the pain stop? And he couldn't make the pain stop. We came and said to him, why don't you go away? You made everything worse. That's the story. You know, very often, as part of our spiritual development, you know, we have to let go. But when we let go, everything starts to get worse. So Maggid, the telling of the Haggadah, is really the story about how we were really powerless and we didn't even know that much to know that we were in a sad state. We were just in a lot of pain. The pain can grow so great. And this is the story of the four sons. The Chocham, the wise man, the Rosha, the wicked one, the Tam, the simple one, and Sheheni Yodei Lisho, the one who doesn't know how to ask. And you know, in a sense, this is our story. We come into young adulthood full of whatever it is, full of enterprise and optimism, and we're so wise, right? And then things go wrong, and then we're so wicked, and then, you know, we fall into this place where we become simpletons. We can't, you know, we're at that stage where we can't really help ourselves anymore, and then we go beyond that. We become the Sheheni Yodei Lisho. We reach such a low spiritual state where we don't even know how to ask anymore. And this is the story of the Jewish people. We start with Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and then we're the brothers selling our brothers, and then we're down in Egypt, and then we don't even know how to ask anymore. We become the Sheheni Yodei Lisho. So, Haggadah. This is the meaning of Haggadah. These are hard words. We have to accept that it's not, we didn't get here by our noble struggle. What was the story? Well, the story was that God opened our eyes. And God sent down somebody to get us out of there, Moshe. So the story, the Haggadah, really means that I can reveal who I really am. You know who we really are? We were pagans. We weren't just idol worshippers. We used to actually sell idols. It's not enough we used to use crack cocaine, but we were actually a dealer, right? We actually sold this stuff. What's the upshot? Everybody has to realize by the end of the Haggadah that I can reveal who I really am. That's not a problem. There's nothing that I could say about myself that will cause anybody to reject me. Because it follows, if I've accepted the first reality, that I'm a creature of God, then the second reality is that you can know me on the insides, and I don't have to put all my energy into hiding who I am. And so at the end of the Haggadah, which is page 40 in this Haggadah, we make a bracha, Gal Yisrael, and then we drink the second cup of wine. And the kavana, when we're drinking the second cup of wine, is we say, let me just find it here on the page. Master of the world. You created me for what reason? You created me so that through me you will be great. The glory of God will be magnified through me. Which means that I can stand in front of the whole world in your light, and I don't have to be ashamed to death. I don't have to be mortified, because you made me. And if I can really internalize that, especially since I'm together with other people who are internalizing the same thing, that this is a journey where we come out of hiding and we come into the light, and that it's okay, and that it doesn't really matter what everybody finds out about me, I don't have to protect these secrets with my life. I can stand in the light. This is the meaning of the second cup. We said that the third cup was when a person realizes that they can have their needs met by others. You know, I thought that I'm so bad, so my chief directive is that I have to not let anybody see who I really am. But if I can get past that, and I can allow people to see who I am, and I can start intimacy, you know, with other people, and I can, you know, let down my guard and let other people inside and see what's going on inside of me, no, then I'm ready for the third cup. Because what happens, I sit down at the meal, sitting with my family, Baruch Hashem, we get to the end of the Haggadah, you know, we eat matzah and morer and koirach, and then we have this beautiful meal, and I'm sitting with my friends and my loved ones. What's the message underneath this? You know, that I really can have all my needs met. I don't have to, like, be this person who's constantly grabbing and chapping and hiding and you know, making sure nobody sees what I have, and nobody will take it away from me. I can sit here at the table and somebody will put a bowl of soup in front of me. I can have all my needs met by others. You know, this stupidity of trying to, like, grab because there's not enough for me, or because there won't be any for me, or because somebody's going to take it away from me. It's part of that thinking that came about because I felt so damaged and I had to hide and so forth. But here, if I'm out in the light and I really believe that I'm a creature of God and that I can be seen, then I can have my needs met. Other people feel the same way. Other people can be seen. We can be together as human beings. Our energy doesn't go into hiding. So I can have my needs met. Well, in the Seder, that time is when I come to the end of the meal and I say Birchas Hamazon. And so, on page 64, before we drink the third cup of wine, I hold it in my hand and say, Master of the Universe, Hargish Tomich has beer called Rotsoini, Tzorchi. I can feel all the time that I can feel full, I can feel satisfied, that I can have my needs met. Veneni Tzorch Litirbdois Shemela Estabek, I don't need to be in this constant state of anxiety that there won't be enough for me. Yesh Maspik Gamli, there's enough for me also. And then we come to the final myth, which is, what are my needs? What are a person's needs? No, today we really got to go back to that very beginning. What did I need? I needed acceptance. I needed to be loved unconditionally. So the process of singing the Hallel is that process of realizing that it was all about love from the beginning. That's all I'd really ever needed. I needed to be loved unconditionally. And that's what God has really tried to show me all this time, through all these thousands of years. God has tried to explain to us that He loves us unconditionally, and that the only way we're going to experience that is if we love ourselves unconditionally, and we show that by acting it out to others, and we love others unconditionally. That one is the only way of showing the other, and in order to know what it is, you have to do it. And so the process of the singing of Hallel is that process of Rabbeinu Shel Olam. That's what it was all about from the beginning. And so before we drink the fourth cup of wine, I say, Master of the Universe, Ze kol tzorkiu megamosi b'olam, this is all I need. This is my whole goal in the universe. Is Ahava Saboira, love of God. What is love of God? I am love of God. You know, if we exist here in the world, because God loves me, because God wanted me. I mean, like however you interpret those ideas, I'm here because God made me. I am the love of God. That's really who I was. And when something happened to me and I went into that shell and broke and split and shattered and all that stuff and started to hide, this is the fixing, to know that I am the love of God.